I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that isn't afraid of a little bloodletting as long as it stays on the movie screen. Thing is, though, we prefer it when our splatter parades are blended with some suspense. Suspense is something writer-director John Krasinski knows well enough, as he demonstrated in his 2018 film, A Quiet Place, and just as well in his follow-up, A Quiet Place Part 2. Zack Snyder, by contrast, is less interested in suspense than he is in merely painting the screen red, as he does with obvious glee in his Netflix film, Army of the Dead, though that's not likely to bother his fans in the slightest. Let's begin this week's show by exploring a post-apocalyptic world or even a whisper can get you killed. A Quiet Place Part 2 begins before the beginning, so to speak, as we see the event that sets the whole story in place, an alien invasion that interrupts a small town kid's baseball game. That event introduces us to all the key characters. Lee Abbott, played by writer-director Krasinski, who, as anyone who has seen the first film knows, won't be around long. His wife, Evelyn, played by Emily Blunt, children Reagan, Millicent Simmons, and Marcus, Noah Jupe, along with family friend Emmett, played by Cillian Murphy. Then we shift to some 400 days later, and Evelyn and the children are on the move, forced to leave their home in search of sanctuary, always careful not to make any noise, because that's how the killer aliens contract them. They do, though, make noise, that is, and that is one of the ways that Krasinski both propels his narrative and provides his film with a riveting and continual sense of suspense. One of the strengths of A Quiet Place Part 2 is that even at one point, while giving us three plot lines to follow at once, Krasinski provides everyone with the chance to play the hero, from deaf teen Reagan to Evelyn herself, not to mention Emmett and Marcus, without forcing the issue. The main weakness? An ending that virtually screams Part 3.
I have to admit that when we saw the first Quiet Place back in 2018, although it seems so much longer ago now, I was not exactly clamoring for more. I thought it was perfect as a standalone movie. But of course, it was a huge surprise hit and we had to get a part two. And this is one of the rare sequels that I think is as good, if not better, than the original. I thought that Krasinski's direction and sense of pacing and the way that the story played out was so much more confident than it was in the first film. And that was a movie where it works in the moment. And then if you think about it for half a second after the movie's over, the logic of it kind of falls apart where you're like, well, how come the monsters can hear certain noises but not others? And how come they have that waterfall that they go to when they want to have conversations out loud because the monsters can't hear them? Why don't they just live down by the waterfall? All of that stuff kind of comes back to you after the fact. And I was more willing to go along with it this time, I think, because I understood the rules of how the monsters worked already going in. And in that prologue at the beginning, it almost seems like the John Krasinski character kind of already knows how the monsters work. It's like he's seen the predecessor already, even though this is the sequel. So there's, again, a little bit of a kind of a logic jump you have to do there. But what this movie does that the first one doesn't do is sort of what you outlined, is that it actually separates its characters at one point. And there's a really terrific kind of montage near the middle of this movie, two-thirds of the way through, I think, where we're following Millicent Simmons and Cillian Murphy, and then you have Emily Blunt kind of going off and doing her own thing, and then Noah Jupe is back in their conclave with the baby. And the way that those three threads intercut is really cleverly done. And then there's a moment where in each of the three strands, air, fire, and water all play a key part. And I thought the way that that was done was very good. It could have actually been the climax of the movie, because I think that the climax that comes after isn't as effective as that moment. But yeah, I was really into this all the way through. It's a clean 90 minutes. And I think in the second half of the show, when we look at the Zack Snyder movie, we can certainly talk about runtimes and how long certain movies should be. But this is a perfect 90-minute B movie with an A movie budget. And again, I didn't leave clamoring for part three, although, as you said, the ending is certainly setting it up. But you know what? If we get a part three, I'll go to see it and I'll probably enjoy it just as much. But yeah, I was surprised how good this was. I think that Krasinski did some kind of low-key comedies as a director before he made A Quiet Place.
Yeah, one, The Hollers, I think.
Yeah, and he did a David Foster Wallace adaptation, Brief Interviews with Hideous Men, neither of which I saw. But yeah, I'm surprised by what a good suspense director he has turned into. I like the fact that there's a moment where a character is stepping onto a desk and there's a coffee cup there. And the suspense is, will the coffee cup get knocked over? And I have to laugh when a moment like that happens because I see exactly what he's doing. He's playing with me. He's manipulating me. You don't want the coffee cup to get knocked over, but you also kind of do because then something exciting is going to happen. So yeah, right. I had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah, I mean, in that particular sequence that you're talking about is one that's so obvious, it's like he's letting us in on the joke. He's inviting yes. us. You know, some filmmakers, we'll get to one in a moment, do such things that are obvious just in and of themselves without letting us in. They're just stupid, in your face.
And it's similar to the sequence in the first Quiet Place where there's a nail sticking out of a wood step. And of course, they walk around barefoot everywhere, and we know what's going to happen, and we're kind of laughing and wincing before
and waiting
it even happens.
For it,
that happens a lot here too.
Before we let Mary Pat jump in here, I wanted to do one shout out to the film editor because film editing is one of those things that's so important. And Michael P. Schaver is—you have to give him at least partial credit for that whole sequence that you were talking about with the three plot lines. Very seamlessly go back and forth. So anyway, so Mary Pat, I know that you have a dissenting view of...
I don't necessarily have a dissenting view, but you know how I feel about extraterrestrials, yes, even ET, or monsters, heaven forbid zombies, which we'll get to later. You know, I just don't understand why can't we have the threat be something real or real people?
What, and, UFOs aren't real?
Well, I guess the only real people we can use as threatening these days are people who are Russian, as far as I can tell. Maybe this is a way to engage in othering and have the threat be, you know, more esoteric or impossible or something along those lines. Because that's my big beef with both of these movies. I don't like monsters and I don't like zombies because they're fake, you know? And let's focus on something that's real.
Okay, given that though.
Okay.
How was the movie?
Trying to get beyond that.
Yeah.
I thought that there were some real highlights of this movie, most notably the performances of everyone. I love watching Cillian Murphy. I would watch him do anything. So he's the star of Peaky Blinders. And even though he's scruffy and looks like, you know, the quintessential mountain man here, you cannot disguise or hide those blue eyes that come through. And he's playing this character who's burdened with the realization that he couldn't save his own family. And so it takes a while, but he's willing to sort of save this surrogate group of people who've adopted or clung on to him. I liked watching him. I think Noah Jupe, who's the boy,
Remember him from Honey Boy.
Yes. Occasionally he sort of got stuck with the same expression on his face, but for the most part, he had to carry some aspects of the movie dealing with the baby. Number one, that were most difficult. And of course, Millicent Simmons, is that how you pronounce her last name? She's amazing. And she was the heroine of this movie.
And she's actually deaf in real life.
Yes. And so I really appreciated watching her throughout. You know, her relationship with her family of origin, the way that she bonds with Cillian Murphy, all of those things were really positive for a movie such as this.
And, you know, the thing that I appreciated among many other things about A Quiet Place Part Two, in today's Hollywood, we have so many minorities, we have women, we have people with disabilities. They feel shoehorned into traditional roles. And, you know, sometimes it just feels fake. It does not feel fake in this. Everything feels naturalistic. These people are all heroes in their own way. And I just think it's a very, very clever script that was put on the screen in a very clever way.
The only question I have is why was Jimon Hunsu like given such like a cameo sort of part here? Because you know, as long as you were going to go in that direction and introduce us to this other group of people who had survived, why not do a little bit more of that? So it's interesting.
Let's not give away too much. Okay.
You talk about the 90 minutes, but I think that this could have taken a little bit more time to explore other options here.
And I want to get back into that idea of the threat not being scary because it isn't real. I mean, I don't believe in extraterrestrial sound monsters either.
You don't?
The threat, no, can you believe it? To me, the fun of it is that it's a device. And the suspense comes from everyday things that you take for granted, like bumping into a wall or dropping something, now can get you killed. That's the fun of these movies. Mm-hmm. And I also think there is a moment where there is a human threat here. I don't want to give too much away,
but we see
that there are these people that also exist out there that seem to be very dangerous, to be monsters themselves.
Just and think I think of that Cormac McCarthy in The Road. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, totally. And I think that when we get Quiet Place 3, because it's not an if, it's a when we're going to get it, I would like to see more of that, the human element, because I think I've had enough of these monsters. Let's see what other kind of monsters this particular apocalypse has wrought, because I think there is more potential here, but
yeah, so you think of
it is what it is.
You think of the Mad Max movies, for example. I mean, that's a perfect example of people fighting other people, and you don't understand everything about what's going on, but I prefer that. But having said all of that, yes, I will give a shout out to The Quiet Place, which you should probably see in the theater, which is where it's playing right now.
At the Magic Lantern, among other places.
Right. Or on the IMAX, whatever you prefer.
Yeah. And that was A Quiet Place Part 2. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Netflix offering Army of the Dead. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed A Quiet Place Part 2. Let's now move to Army of the Dead. By now, most movie fans should be aware of Zack Snyder, the Michael Bay of his kind of movie. I say his kind because, as my partner Nathan makes clear, both Snyder and Bay make films that are easily recognizable both in theme and style. To which also I would add both entertaining, sometimes, and ridiculous, often at once. Here, Snyder returns to the world of zombies that he most famously explored with his 2004 remake of George Romero's 1978 shopping mall zombie extravaganza, Dawn of the Dead. The twist, such as it is that Snyder blends two traditional genres, the zombie and the heist flick. After an opening that sets up the MacGuffin, the release of a deadly strain of something zombie-causing that we ultimately learn can be used as a biological weapon, we progress to a setting in which the whole of Las Vegas's strip has been cordoned off and plans are being made to nuke it on July 4th, no less. Meanwhile, a group of former mercenaries led by burger-flipping character played by muscle man Dave Bautista is recruited to find a way into the strip before the nuking so that the team can retrieve $500 million from a casino vault. It's all overly long at 2 hours and 28 minutes, overly serious. Remember when zombie flicks had the occasional bit of humor, and overly gratuitous in its bloodletting. O Snyder, thy name will never, ever be confused with subtlety.
Nor will it be confused with excellence. Just putting it out there. I mean, I know it's trite to say that no words can express your emotions, but in this case, there's really so little that I can say that will truly capture how I was feeling.
Perhaps a few
film.
Animal sounds.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Maybe some keening or something would be appropriate here. This to my way of thinking was the worst possible combination of plot points, people, special effects. It's so fake at different points. I almost thought that it was one of Nathan's high school movies that had come back to haunt us.
Let's not demean Nathan's high school movies.
No,
now.
Actually,
come on.
I saw one recently that was pretty darn good. So
and it was only about a minute and a half. So I've got that on Zack Snyder.
Yeah. So it had that going for it. Yeah, I mean, so imagine the Fast and Furious in Las Vegas that, has fallen apart, perhaps justifiably so, with people who are so earnest about what they're doing, despite the hilarity of what's going on around them. And that'll sort of give you a slice of what's happening here. And you talk about the bloodletting. I mean, after a while, it just became so tedious. I mean, it was not gross. You labeled it as gratuitous, and that probably doesn't even capture what's going on. So to my way of thinking, there was no reason for this movie to exist in the first place. And there was certainly no reason for this movie to be 2.5 hours long. The only thing that I can say about it is that it's streaming. And so that gives you the opportunity to watch it in small parts if you want to. It gives you the option to lie on your couch at home and watch it or pretend to watch it. It gives you the opportunity to use all the mind-altering substances at once in order to watch it. So there's, I guess, some benefits to it, but that's about all I could come up with.
I'll think of a couple nice things to say about Army of the Dead. I thought that some of the zombie kills were a lot of fun. I feel like American cinema has lost its love of splatter. And I sort of appreciated the fact that zombies get crushed in this movie and it's just like gloop and glop all over the place. And part of me enjoys that. Did I need 150 minutes of it? Absolutely not. Snyder's movies in the past, even the bad ones, have looked really great in places. Like I just think about Watchmen and how good that movie looked, and say what you will about 300, which I'm not a fan of, but it at least had a very distinctive visual style that was being copied by other people for, you know, a good decade after that movie came out. This movie, which Zack Snyder shot himself, it's the first feature in which he has been his own director of photography, and he apparently bought some old lenses off of eBay and rehabbed them. There was like a whole featurette about this. This is one of the ugliest movies I've seen in a long time. I mean, the whole movie, it has like the softest focus of any movie I can think of, where there are shots where 2/3 of the screen is entirely out of focus. And it's like when you go into Instagram and you can pick one part of the frame and make that in focus and make everything else out of focus. Most of the movie looks like that. And from what I understand, that was his intent. He wanted it to have this kind of dreamlike soft focus quality, which one, it looks awful. So I don't know why he wanted it to look like that. And two, that approach doesn't fit this material at all. So the whole thing just feels really strange. And another nice thing I'll say is Tig Notaro as the helicopter pilot, the escape pilot here, who is apparently,
right.
This is, I think,
I was
most...
going to say that too.
Oh, okay. This is the most amusing thing about Army of the Dead is that she was apparently basically edited into the movie after principal photography was done to replace another actor that got canned for sexual assault allegations. And so they just pasted Tig Notaro over him. And it's a pretty seamless operation, I have to say. It's like when Christopher Plummer got CGI'd into All the Money in the World. And she is the only spark of life in this. Like, I kind of wanted her to be almost like the central
character.
Yeah, because she had this kind of sardonic approach to things. But yeah, I would have to echo, though, all of the other sentiments you said, even though I think I hated this less than you. I did not like it at all.
You know, I wanted to go back a little bit to what you were talking about, the humor. I see your point about love of splatter. And, you know, there is one scene in which in the vault that a zombie gets crushed by these trap doors and it pulled back. And, that, you know, that was almost funny. In another context,
I liked that part.
In another context, it would have been funny. But, you know, I kept thinking all the way through this of Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight and Heath Ledger's Joker character. And I keep going, why so serious? I mean, There's nothing worse than a filmmaker who thinks he's making an epic film and is so serious about it. I mean, every scene is milked for everything you possibly could. How many times do we have to have Batista talk about, well, you know, maybe I should make hamburgers or maybe I should do this. And, you know, it's like, oh, please. Every scene was, you could see where it could be pared down to something leaner and meaner.
Yeah. And more fewer characters too.
Oh, geez. Follow. Exactly. Yeah.
There's also all of this imagery that's recalling the camps at the borders and children in cages.
Yes. That's the series. Yes.
I think there's an accidental sort of parallel with real life because there's all these like this talk of temperature checks and quarantining. And I think that's just a coincidence. But and there's certainly some call outs to the Trump administration that I think without saying those words. And Sean Spicer has a cameo in this movie.
Oh, yes. Exactly.
So there are all of these attempts to make it some kind of political allegory. But the allegory is confused because you have people in cages or in holding camps, but what does that have to do with the zombie outbreak? Because it's basically like going back to the why so serious thing. This is basically a combination of Aliens and Escape from New York, both of which were a lot more fun and had a lot more humor in them than this
one does. That's right. John Carpenter was never a master filmmaker. But he does have a good sense of cinema that Snyder will never understand.
Yeah, and he's also a master filmmaker.
Yeah,
I think that's opinion. What you meant to say. My correct opinion.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Well, we're all looking forward to Snyder's next film. Is he doing an adaptation of Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, or is it?
He's been wanting to do that for a long time.
We'll
see.
Insufferable,
exactly. So that was Army of the Dead, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed John Krasinski's A Quiet Place Part 2. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you, too, our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words of Margaret Atwood's from her insightful novel, The Handmaid's Tale. That was when they suspended the Constitution. They said it would be temporary. There wasn't even any rioting in the streets. People stayed home at night, watching television, looking for some direction. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.